Episode 72 of This Developing Story. Still doing the 5 a.m., the 10 a.m. schedule, and then doing a sort of like a split shift, and then doing like some late evening work, which has been good because I was able to spend a lot of time with family, do Thanksgiving, and then still work. So I still worked even on Thanksgiving. I worked that morning, and then Black Friday, pretty much worked about most of the morning and then into the evening. And yeah, I've definitely liked working remotely and working from home. It's a great benefit I have currently at my company. I think with us being so small, like it works. We don't have tons of meetings that I have to be in face-to-face for. So this week will be a little different. I'll actually be in the office a little more. And but I think I'm going to take more advantage of the working remotely, especially in days I don't need to be in the office, just because I enjoy actually working, getting up early. So it's nice to get my job started when I have some of my most optimal times for writing code. So as far as this episode, I've got Ben Oladipo. I believe I said his last name right. Ben's a friend from the Bay Area. I've actually seen him quite a few times at different conferences speaking, and I actually ran into him and met him at Connect Tech down in Atlanta, the last conference I did. So I met him officially there, even though I've been at the same meetups and conferences as him. I haven't met in person. What's interesting about the Bay Area meetups is that they're actually pretty large. Most don't go under 100 people attending, and they go up to at least 300. Some of the React Native meetups, I think, are pretty large. They always have those at some of the larger companies in the Bay Area. But anyway, besides that, Ben is he's manager now. He used to be a senior developer. Now he's a manager at Eventbrite, mainly doing front-end UI stuff. And he's been programming for quite some time. And hope you guys enjoy his intro to programming and also his developing story. And yeah, I find Ben a cool dude, and I hope you guys do too. So without further ado, here's Ben.
Well, hello, everyone. My name is Ben Alegbadu, and I currently work at Eventbrite. I am the manager of our front-end platform team, also an engineer on the team as well. So I do both management as well as engineering, because our team is only three people, including myself. So there's only two people to manage, and they're also senior engineers. So there hasn't been too much actual hands-on management to have to do yet, but that might change when the team grows. So a kind of 50-50 split between doing engineering and doing management. And this is my first time ever being a manager too. So I'm kind of getting a taste of what that feels like as well after being in this industry for almost 10 years. So I got into programming a long time ago, probably, I think it was when I was in middle school, basically. And there was this engineering, math, and science institute that was held at this private school that was in my area in Houston. And the way that the institute worked is that it was a three-year program. And then in the fourth year, you would get an internship at a engineering-based company. So the first year, they had three classes of, or three groups, I guess, of...
Yeah.
Of students, and then the second year was two groups, and the third year was one group, so they kind of whittled it down that way. But anyway, one of the classes that they offered was programming classes or computer science classes, and the first class I took was on basic programming, and then I took one on Pascal and I think C++ in those consecutive 3 years. And I had never done programming, I don't think, before that, but when I started doing basic, I really liked it. I just kind of liked the idea of logic and trying to get the computer to do something. I'd always been really good at math and enjoyed that. And I think up until that point, I thought I wanted to be an accountant, because that's the only thing I knew at the time, that profession I knew at the time that did math. But when I did the programming, I really liked it. And then at the same time, we had the Texas Instruments calculators, so the TI calculators.
So, like the TI-86?
Yeah, I had a TI-83, I think, okay. Is what it was. And with those TI-83s, you could create programs on it, and you could type it by hand on the calculator and put in programs. So the first programs I would make were actually math programs to help me solve math problems. So I would use it to do my homework and things like that. And at the time, I rationalized it like, if I can write a program to solve this problem, then I know how to do it. It's just a matter of executing or whatever. So making a slope calculator, all kinds of different algebra stuff, trigonometry things, made programs to do that. And then I started making games. So I made a game where you could bowl. So this like zero, it was all ASCII, right? So this zero would go up the screen and then hit some pins, which were like dots or something like that. I can't remember how it worked now. But yeah, made various different games that you could play, which was a lot of fun. And still kind of coding that all on the calculator. It was only until later where they had integrations into the computers and you could actually type in a normal text editor, which was a huge efficiency boost.
Yeah, so, I could imagine. I mean, I never actually coded on my phone before, but I imagine it'd be just as bad.
Yeah. Just imagine coding on your phone. But the difference, it's even worse because at least our phones now have keys for each different key. That one is like texting. Remember where you had to like type the 5 key 3 times to get to L?
Oh, and T9.
Yeah, T9. There you go. Exactly. So that's how I was actually writing programs. So there was lots of errors, of course, and I could only do so much at a given time. But that was a lot of fun. So I think there's still this website called ticalc.org where you could post your programs and then people could download it onto their phones. So I got really involved in that community and people started wanting help in building programs on BASIC. So I started teaching people and writing kind of documentation on how to do that. And the first set of documentation that I did was using kind of this Windows help application, I guess. So you could actually build help apps in Windows at the time. It was basically like fancy HyperCard at the time. So you could just define a screen and then link to that screen and different screens could link to each other and stuff like that. So I built something like that, but then decided to build my own website instead because that was easier to deploy. So found some kind of hosting solution, free hosting solution, like GeoCities or something like that. I can't remember what it was at that time. And yeah, that was my first website. And I just loved building a website. Like I liked the immediacy of it, the fact that I could send it to somebody and they could see it across the globe. And at that point, I knew that I wanted to do web development. But throughout high school and college, web development was never a thing that was taught. It was kind of always the side thing that people did. You got your solid computer science degree, and then you could do some web development. There are only a couple of classes in school and college that actually were related to web development, and I took all of them.
Yeah. What languages did they teach in at the school you went to?
So at Stanford, they taught us C++. I think it was actually C in the intro class, but I got to skip that because I had done computer science in high school. But then it was C++ and then Java. And then I took this kind of programming languages class where they taught you all different programming languages like Lisp and Haskell and other languages like that. I kind of now wish I would have paid more attention to Lisp because a lot of those concepts are coming back into functional programming in JavaScript.
Cool. So yeah, so you got your undergrad at Stanford, and then did you do postgrad work, or did you move right into the field after that?
So I did what was called a co-terminal degree at Stanford. So basically in 5 years, I was able to get my undergrad and master's in computer science.
Oh, cool.
And I got my focus on my master's was human-computer interaction. So that was kind of the closest you could get to web development.
How would you just like human computer interaction sounds super fascinating. But is that more of like a buzzword on top of something that maybe might not be that fascinating?
I think it's pretty fascinating. It's kind of like what you would call now UX design, I would say.
Oh, okay.
So it's learning the process of interviewing people and finding out what their needs are, and then observing them and seeing what they do and running user tests and things like that. So it actually ended up being really helpful for me, because I got my degree in computer science, so I knew like hardcore programming and could really understand what backend engineers did. I myself was a front-end engineer, so obviously I knew what I was doing. But then because I had the HCI degree, I could also talk to product managers and UX designers and things like that, because I could think in the way that they thought. Now, I couldn't design in the way that they could, but at least I could understand and be a part of it. So I was able to kind of be a bridge in that regard.
Cool. Yeah. And then so you went from school then to the workplace?
Yes. So after school, went to a startup in Palo Alto at the time called Zazzle. It still exists now, Zazzle. And I was there for almost 9 years, which is an eternity in the Bay Area in Silicon Valley. But
yeah, that is.
I was probably like one of the 20 something employee, and it grew to be, 200 plus over the years, and lots of people came and left during that time. So was able to really dig my roots in and go deep into different areas and into our platform. Ended up becoming like the architect of our UI. And even though it was a long time, and sometimes I think maybe I should have left after 3 or 4 years or what have you, I think it gave me a good perspective on architecture design, which is what I really like to do, building architectures as opposed to building specific features. So having been there for so long and seen iterations and iterations of the same project, I could now see what tech debt does for a project if you don't try to get rid of it early. I could see how what people think in the moment could affect the project in the long term, and kind of seeing how if you architect things different ways, how it can make the situation better or worse 3 years down the line, because most people don't even stay at a company for that long. So
yeah,
they don't really have to worry about the results of what they're doing.
Yeah. And that's like, especially in the Bay Area, like I know so many engineers that and I've made friends with that kind of rotate through the different companies,
mm-hmm.
but just mainly just to like play with different technologies, like always keep up to date with the latest things.
Exactly.
But I think the other, like what you're talking about, which you actually get to see the life cycle of an actual product swell and like grow and then also struggle as well. So it definitely brings a lot of more, it brings a different perspective to the experience, I guess.
Exactly. It's a different perspective. So I totally value the, 2 or 3 years and move on and try different experiences, because the downside of what I did is that I was in the same code base, the same mind of thinking for that long. And the reason I ultimately left is because I wanted to have a different experience. I was doing C# in this kind of homegrown JavaScript framework that we had built. And I was like, I want to get out of this mold. So I went to Eventbrite, which was only my second company, which is doing Python, and we're using Backbone and Marionette, and now we're transitioning to React. So just having so many different experiences. At Zazzle, our build system was homegrown as well. So we didn't even use NPM or Browserify or all of the module stuff. But now I got introduced to that at Eventbrite and was able to kind of grow and learn more about the various different ecosystems.
Now, was it homegrown, I guess your words, but was it homegrown because you guys either used different language, or because the actual product was so old? Not old, I guess old is a weird, 9 years is really not that old, but for the web it seems old. Like, what was the reason for having homegrown technologies?
Yeah, it was because the stuff didn't exist when the company started. The company started in 2005, jQuery was probably in alpha at that time, so we built our own framework. There were no build systems or anything like that, so we had to roll those ourselves, and we got so invested in that system and built so much value in that system, it became harder and harder to transition to something different.
Okay. And do you keep in touch with anybody on the team to know if they've transitioned to modern build tools and frameworks at
they
all?
They have, yes. So I have a couple of contacts. So now they switched to React as well. I think the framework that we had is very similar to React, which is why I think I've latched on to React as much as I have. It's written completely differently, but the idea of components and componentization and composition and stuff like that is the same. And they're using NPM and stuff like that. So it's slowly moving over. I think it actually helped them with me leaving because I was kind of like the last of the quote-unquote old guard. So now you had new folks who had new perspectives who knew how to use NPM and all of these modern technologies. They had been doing it in their personal projects, so they're able to inject that and infuse it into the company, which is great.
Yeah, very cool. And then you mentioned React too. So I wanted to get in a little bit about some of the, you're doing quite a bit of conference speaking and talks at meetups. So like, how long ago did you actually start doing this this speaking circuit, I guess, per se? Because I don't know if you would call it a circuit, but you're pretty active in the community for sure.
Yeah, when I started at Eventbrite, one of the things I wanted to do, well, I've always actually wanted to speak, but at Eventbrite, there were a number of other people who, when I mentioned it, they also were already speaking, so they could actually show me how to get involved and how to write abstracts and kind of what the process is like, what to expect. So my first talk was actually last October at a conference, Little Rock Tech Fest, it was called. So it was in Little Rock, Arkansas. So it's only been 13 months or so that I've been speaking, but it kind of just took off and I really hustled to find different conferences. I did what I call this kind of spray and pray method where I applied to 25 different conferences, only got into 3 or 4, but that was still a lot. And then once I was able to get into some and get videos from those, then now other conferences can see what I've done and I was able to do a good job, I guess. So then it just kind of snowballs from there.
So I'm like, I've been speaking, I guess I've been speaking as long as you have, just not as many times. But yeah, I'm at the point where I've actually submitted to about 10 so far. Mm-hmm. And I saw your list that you threw up on GitHub as well. I'm leveraging that and also leveraging another list that I need to connect to you to as well.
Yeah.
So I'll open up some PRs on your GitHub, but also there's another list that one of our marketing people have thrown together as well.
Cool.
And yeah, so I'm really excited to start speaking as well. I think career-wise for me, I've gotten to the point where I now have a lot more to talk about. Before I felt like I was just doing the same thing everybody else was doing. And
right.
Now I have the opportunity to start not just speaking about like cutting edge things, but just speaking about things that everybody might not already know.
Yeah.
I think you get to a point where in your career where you think everybody knows what you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm starting to realize more and more as I do more React and spread out to React Native and then even like Angular that not everybody knows what they're doing. And it's good to share your experiences.
Yeah.
So what sort of things do you... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say kind of riffing off that. So I'm actually in the middle of thinking through a new talk, which is about... It's a talk about giving talks and how to get into conference speaking. Now that I've done it for a year, kind of demystifying what it takes to get into conference talks. Because I was like you. I felt like I didn't know anything brand new. Like I wasn't innovating anything. I wasn't coming up with a new library or I'm not the one writing the ES6 spec or anything like that. So what could I actually speak about? But the thing is, like you said, just even speaking about what you're doing on a daily basis is like helpful for people. I've been giving talks on ES6. I'm not involved with the ECMAScript committee or anything like that. I just read different articles about how the different features work and then put together a talk to kind of explain it to people because people want to know those kind of things. So my take on talks, or specifically the technical ones, isn't like I'm not going to be, let's see, Jafar Hussein, for instance, who's going to spread the gospel about RxJS, for instance. I don't think I'll ever be that person, but once certain technology becomes solidified, I want to help people learn how to use it and apply it in their everyday work. So I'm not teaching you anything new, and most people may already know it, but just kind of how can you apply that and learn it solidly so that you're using it correctly.
Yeah, and it's funny because I just met Sean Larkin. I don't know if you know who that is.
Name doesn't ring a bell.
He is the one of the core team for Webpack.
Okay.
And so he's like the only core team member in the US mm-hmm. at the moment. And so he was here for, he's actually in the Bay Area right now for the Chrome Web Summit.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
I had randomly tweeted him and he connected. We met at the meetup. And he only has been on the core team since May, okay. I think. And before that, he was pretty relatively unknown. And basically what he did, similar to us, like he just, for the longest time, he just kind of coded and didn't think he really knew much about anything to be able to do talking. Mm-hmm. But then he did an intro to Webpack talk because he realized not a lot of people know about Webpack.
Yep.
And then he met the Webpack guys by going on the JS Air podcast.
Okay.
For the Webpack episode.
Yep.
And then after the episode, they asked him to be part of the core team. And he kind of just like fell right into it. And then realizing that the fact that like, I mean, Webpack, it's no mystery. It's kind of confusing stuff.
Yeah,
for sure. But being able to like take this confusion and take away that assumption that everybody knows what it is, like what they're doing except him.
Yeah.
Like he was able to write that out and start helping with the documentation. And now like now he's the sole US evangelist for Webpack.
Wow.
And like always on Twitter and now also speaking on another conference circuit as well, which mm-hmm. is amazing. So it's just literally just finding not only finding your niche, but also just realizing like the imposter syndrome, whether it's a myth or whether it's real or whatnot, like just understand that like everybody's basically like, there's a saying that I always heard when I was growing up, which is most of us is like the rest of us.
Yep.
And the same struggles that you go through, that prevents you from getting out there and speaking and sharing your knowledge is like the same thing that like me and you are struggling with. And I think it's nice to be able to say it out loud. So that way other people can understand that.
Exactly. The people you see at conference speaking, you may look up to them cause they're standing on the stage, but they're just like you. They were you a year ago, probably. So it's nothing different. It's just, they seized the opportunity and found something that they're passionate about to share about. So I'm yeah. pretty sure it's like if anybody who is able to speak for 30 minutes on a topic, like they can do conference speaking.
Yeah. And there's like so much stuff that we get passionate about, especially around the React stuff. Like before I even got into React, people were just like eerie. It was eerie to me how excited people are about this one JavaScript library.
Yeah.
It made me avoid it for the longest time. And then when I got into it, then I kind of understood why everybody was excited about it.
Yeah.
But like take the excitement of learning a new framework or a new technology, regardless of whether you're learning Angular 1.x for the first time mm-hmm. after it's like no longer on the upgrade path, like still take that because there's still other people like getting into programming on an Angular 1 route and that will find any blog posts or talks that you put out there super valuable. And then so you're in the Bay Area.
Yep.
Are you also involved like in different tech scenes as well? Any other meetup groups and stuff like that you attend?
So I've started kind of being a part of the different React meetup groups. So there's the main one in the Bay Area, or at least my part of the Bay Area, is the React SF meetup. So I've spoken there and I've gone to a couple of talks in that regard. So that's kind of been the limit of my involvement. I would go to different talks in the Bay Area or in San Francisco specifically now and again. So go to a React Native meetup, go to a Node meetup, those kind of things. I haven't really gotten into the community, I would say, in the Bay Area for meetups. Like I've been spending most of my time trying to get into conferences. The funny thing about conference speaking is that most people say, hey, you should just speak at a meetup first and get your feet wet and maybe get a video from that, and then you can move into conferences. But what I found is that there are more people at Bay Area meetups than there are at the conferences that I've spoken at.
Yeah.
I was practicing for a conference talk that we both were at in Atlanta. And I practiced it at a meetup that we had at Eventbrite, and there were 200 people at the one at Eventbrite. But then in Atlanta, there was only 50 people or something like that. So it's kind of a different mindset. I feel like there's more pressure from my eyes to speak at a meetup than there's to speak at a conference, because at a meetup, they're coming to hear specifically my talk. Like, that's yeah. why you left work or didn't go home. It was to hear the talk. Whereas the conference, multi-track, well, I'm just here. Let me just check it out. So there's kind of less pressure.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely a different perspective. And I think even the Bay Area, with us being in a bubble, and everybody being of the same vein of programmers who work in the city, who can have the availability to walk two blocks over from their work to check out a meetup talk and get yeah. free pizza. It's I don't know. I'm not sure. The Bay Area programmers are definitely top notch, and they definitely seek out like what they want. So like they won't show up meetups that don't seem interesting. Mm-hmm. And I think the perspective is quite different outside the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. There are some like different pockets. Like I came from Tampa and Orlando, and Orlando had a very, very strong tech community, and they had it probably hit about 50 to 75 people on a regular night for a JavaScript meetup. Mm-hmm. And that's, I don't know if that's outside the norm, because I've only been the Bay Area and then the Tampa Bay Area. So there's not, I don't know, really know the distinction, but I did get that feeling as well when we were at the conference in Atlanta, where I similarly did the same talk at a meetup in the Bay Area and had a packed house with standing room only
yep.
to then give a talk to a room full of less than 50 people. So it's quite interesting, but you know, I think I really enjoy speaking and also meeting people outside of the Bay Area
yep.
to find out what other people are excited about. Because one thing I found out really clearly when we got to there, that conference in Atlanta, is that Angular is still very valid. And people are very excited about Angular too.
Yeah.
As opposed to most people I come into contact with in the Bay Area, like they're familiar with Angular too, but they're not really using it. Everybody that I associate with are very strong React developers yep. and some Ember developers. But yeah, it's just a different perspective really kind of helps you to not get stuck into the... I don't know how to describe it. Like, we could totally be React, like call ourselves React developers, but I like Kent C. Dodd's perspective when he calls himself a JavaScript developer. Mm-hmm. And like really just be open-minded to all things. Like don't pigeonhole yourself into certain things. And it could be easy to do that, especially when we're in a bubble and everybody's yeah. doing the latest and greatest.
Exactly. Exactly. And I really enjoy actually going and speaking at other locations, like small locations. I was speaking in Oklahoma City last week, and you really get a sense, or I really got a sense of the community feel there. Like, they have OKCJS, which is their kind of their meetup or monthly meetup thing, and they know people from those meetups. Like, when they meet together at the conference, it's like, oh yeah, I've seen you before. Like, it's a kind of a small group, so there really is that yeah. kind of community feel, and they're all learning from each other and helping each other grow. I think just the Bay Area is way too big to kind of get that scene unless you're doing some really tiny niche
yeah.
Thing.
Yeah, that was my perspective coming up through in Florida, where we had that tightly knit group. Like, even though like 50 to 70 people, like we knew everybody that came. And if you only came occasionally, then like we still knew who you were and knew you by first name. Mm-hmm. I think the Bay Area, it suffers from that, especially with the React meetup, which is RSVP only.
Yep.
And it always hits the limit. So it doubles
yep.
the RSVP with also a waiting list. But then there's some other niche meetups too. I don't know if you know about Waffle.js, and there's also Dogpatch.js as well, and Oakland.js.
I have heard of Oakland.js, but I haven't heard of okay. Waffle or Dogpatch.
Yeah, so Dogpatch is a little less frequent. I've only seen it up once, and then summertime they stopped doing it for the summer. So I'm not sure if they picked it up again. But yeah, Waffle.js is basically a JavaScript meetup, and it's a paid event. So you actually get a waffle included with the price yeah. of admission.
Okay.
And they meet at the off of 16th Street, and well, between 7th and 16th, where they meet, it's like a food truck mm-hmm. park. And they just usually will have music, and then also do some esoteric talks. So talks not specifically about like, this is a framework or a language that I'm using. This is more about like, here's a cool thing, how I made like music with React, or how I discovered this small little thing like here. So it's less of like, like a way for recruiters to show up and find developers, or a way for developers to share more about their companies and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's more, the focus is like cool things that happened. And then also other developers actually will play music in between each talking spot, which is quite different from any other meetup I've been to. So it's highly recommended if you haven't been.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I think now that kind of sounds familiar. And I think they were like what, 10, 15 minute talks or whatever. So this is really short.
Very short. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And then Oakland JS is no talks. It's just basically everybody comes to the Lost and Found Bar, like literally down the street from where I live. And people show up every week. It's like about the same 10 to 15 people each week, give or take a few other people. And they will just like say hello and basically build relationships off of that. So I think it's also easy for us in the Bay Area to not really know anybody.
Yeah.
Like you could definitely work in the city and never like associate with anyone except the people you work with, which is kind of sad if you kind of think about it. So yeah. those meetups I like because it really builds a sense of community, and not just online, because it's easy to create a community online, but this community is in person and like in real life, which is nice.
Yeah, maybe I'll check out the Oakland one, because I suffer from that, especially the fact that I live an hour from the city. I go into work, I'm at work with my coworkers, and then 5:36 I'm heading home, and that's it. So the only time I do interact with people are at the meetups, but if I'm going to the big meetup, it's more so just to hear what somebody has to say, not necessarily foster community. So I've never been to any of those kind of pair programming or let's just code together type of meetups before. So
yeah oaklandjs.com. Okay. I think I'll be there next Wednesday. I'm planning on meeting a friend there, so
okay.
If you want to join up, just walk on over. Okay. Or take the stop at 19th Street, I guess, is the bar on the way home.
Yep, that's on the way, so no excuses.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one thing, like part of the reason why I do this podcast too as well is like because when I first moved out here to the Bay Area, like I didn't know anybody except the people I worked with. Mm-hmm. And this is like such a great opportunity for me to reach out to other people, and also like I get a chance to get to know you and find out who you are, because I've been following you for maybe 6+ months, maybe since you first started doing conference speaking. So I've been following you, like, but I never actually knew who you were until I met you at the last conference. Yeah. Which is,
same.
Which is pretty great. So like, there's so many people that are coding and doing the same stuff that just don't know each other, that hopefully, as people listen to this, they'll reach out and they'll start going to meetups and making connections. And
yeah.
Especially if you work from home, that's probably the worst.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Cool. And then, so tell me more. So you have your commute. Do you work from home ever for Eventbrite?
Yeah. So we have a pretty flexible work schedule. So there's no specified amount of times I can work from home. It's getting harder now that I have more meetings, now that I'm a manager, but today, for instance, I'm working from home. So I try to work from home at least once a week or so, just to make the commute better. But since I'm actually at the end of the BART line and it's an hour in, I actually work on the train and have a seat both ways usually. So yeah. I'm able to kind of cut down on my time away from home with that.
Yeah. And then you just had a new kid.
Yep.
And so I can empathize too as well. It's nice to be like, I'm working from home today as well, and it's nice to like walk like out of the room and then go have dinner right at 5.
Yeah, exactly.
Not have to worry about waiting to get home.
Exactly. And even though for the most part I'm staying in my room and I have to get work done and have the door closed, still just being able, if I just go to the bathroom or go get something to drink or something like that, just having that interaction, even if it's 5 minutes, 10 minutes throughout the day, is so much better than just when I come home at 6:30, maybe 7, and all I'm able to do is help with the bath time or just read a story before going to bed. So
yeah,
that interaction's great.
Yeah, it's awesome. Parenting is amazing. Cool. So you, you going to be at any conferences coming up soon that maybe people can look out for you?
Well, for the rest of this year, I have one more conference this year, and it's in Vancouver. So unless someone's in Vancouver, probably not going to be attending that. That one's called Confoo, C-O-N-F-O-O. It's not that conference is normally in Montreal in Canada, but now they are doing a Vancouver one on the other side of the Canadian coast, I guess you can call it. So that's in December, yeah. But next year I'm doing a couple of meetups and a couple of conferences in the Bay Area in February. So there's this developer network conference that's going on in San Francisco. There's also Mobile DevCon that's in San Francisco in February. And then there's this, what they're calling a React-a-thon. So yeah. It's pretty cool, though. Like the week leading up to Facebook's React conference, they're going to have a lot of meetups and workshops to help people kind of ramp up and that sort of thing. So if you're like most people and you can't actually go to the React conference because no one can get in, basically,
yeah.
Being able to go to those kind of things. So hosted by different companies and things like that. So I'll probably be speaking at doing a workshop or something like that for that.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. I've submitted the React-a-thon too. And, anxiously waiting to hear feedback. I actually submitted like 3 CFPs to them. So,
oh, nice. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. I have, actually I'm doing a lot of pretty interesting things with React at the moment. So
okay.
Hopefully I'll be able to share, like, besides the design thing that, I walked through,
yep.
At the last, conference, we're doing some pretty interesting things with like CSS modules and et cetera. So
yeah, that's a big topic, styling and React. So
yeah, it's going to be the next big thing. Hopefully people will start coming to a decision of how to do your inline CSS or just doing regular CSS.
Right.
I think it's a pretty hot topic at the moment. So
I would say that's one thing that I'm kind of frustrated about with the React ecosystem is that because there are 5 different ways you can solve one problem, sure, it gives you flexibility so you can do it the way you like. We don't have enough time to, or not enough energy is being put towards depth in solving the problem. So there's a lot of, oh, I was able to get this thing working solutions, but solving everybody's problems or going really into depth, we haven't done it yet. So CSS modules, React CSS modules is an example of that, or inline CSS is another example of that. There are different libraries that kind of solve some problems, but they don't solve all the problems because we don't have enough people trying to solve those problems because they're solving it in a different way. So,
yep. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll get there, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we've had that problem at work where we're talking about solve problems that have been solved already, yep. That we're basically reinventing the wheel at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a very long week discussion and a GitHub issue, basically going back and forth, trying to figure out what's the right way for it. And then we finally came to the conclusion of the problem's already solved. Like, why are we trying to solve it again?
Right.
And now we're moving on to actually solving important problems and problems that haven't been solved yet. So, sometimes you just get in the moment of like, oh yeah. Or you want to bike shed something or prove to the world that you could make it even more complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Not that that's the intention, but it just seems like that's what happens. And so hopefully we can move past that in the next year with React and see what more comes out of it.
Right. Actually go back to spending time solving the problems of the actual company or the actual feature, not the infrastructure,
exactly, yeah.
Or the tool or the technology.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a very good view. Very good point. And on that note, we'll end it there.
Okay.
And if anybody wants to reach out to you, and maybe if they want to reach out to you on the internet or follow up on any of the conferences that you are at, how can they find you?
Probably the best way to find me is on Twitter. So my handle is BenMVP, and my handle for everything is basically BenMVP. I've had it since I was in middle school, so I believe I own it. It might as well be trademarked at this point. But yeah, on Twitter, BenMVP. You can also go to BenMVP.com, which is my blog/website, and you can find all of my speaking engagements there. And I recently just set up an AMA, Ask Me Anything, on GitHub. So on my GitHub, BenMVP as well, I have a repo called AMA where I'm just open to ask any questions about technology, about life, family, whatever it is.
Well, Ben, thanks for coming on and sharing your developing story.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And that's Ben.
Yeah, Ben, like I said, Ben's a pretty cool guy. He's a manager at Eventbrite. Pretty prominent speaker, at least in the past year, at a lot of front-end conferences. So it's a good chance if you have a conference in your state or city, he might be speaking at it. So check him out. Check out some of his conference talks on BenMVP.com. I think he posts most of those on there. And I did want to take some time to just actually mention, if you guys aren't familiar with Zencastr, Zencastr is actually the app that I use to record remotely different different interviews. And I just want to recommend people check it out. I've been using it for over a year now, and they recently just unveiled a pricing plan. So the whole year that I've been using it, it's been free. And they finally unveiled, I guess, a way to make money. So it's actually got some nice, cool bells and whistles and features. And I wanted to actually let everybody know, so that way keep supporting the tool that I've been using for the past year. I definitely want to make sure it's still around. So if you guys have not heard of it or are interested in podcasting or are podcasting and aren't using a tool to record Skype or Hangout interviews, highly recommend checking out Zencastr. Other than that, I've got maybe another episode or two before the end of the year. I'm not going to have any interviews, but I'm going to do some more focusing on goals for the next year. Kind of more of a wrap-up of what my goals were at the beginning of this year and see how I did. I do know that I might have been short of some goals for the first time in a long time. But yeah, we'll see how that goes. I still got a month to actually complete some of the goals I'm looking to accomplish. But other than that, I will move on and I'll let you guys continue hacking.